Now, regular listeners to Mooney Goes Wild will know that every May, the Mooney Show dedicates a one-off programme to our feathered friends and their magnificent Dawn Chorus. A large part of our effort in the annual Dawn Chorus special is to identify the birds involved, an exercise that always involves numerous pairs of finely tuned ears and extensive ornithological knowledge. Soon, however, we may have a computer technology to help us, because scientists have developed a highly advanced bird song decoder, which they claim can automatically identify the call of a vast variety of birds. To tell us more, we've got Dr. Dan Stowell from the Queen Mary University of London, lead author of a report. And good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, good afternoon.
Have I mispronounced your surname? I'm sorry.
My surname is Stowell, yeah.
Yeah. So we're playing our Dawn Chorus there. Now, we sent this to you.
Mm.
And you had a little listen. Tell me what you did.
Well, so the thing is that I'm working on software to actually try and sort of take a recording like that and, without any human intervention, try and work out what bird species are in it. So, you know, I mean, I listened to that, and I'm actually not a bird expert, so I'm, you know, I recognize a wren in there and wood pigeon, mm-hmm. and a few others, but I have no idea what the whole set of birds is that is actually in there. But we take the recording, we feed it into the computer, and the computer tells us what it thinks.
And what did the computer tell you?
Well, it gave us a list, and I think it's pretty good, but not perfect. But that's the way of these things. So it first of all, it thought there was blue tit, great tit, wren, which I agree with.
There's a wren, yeah.
Sedge warbler.
There was a sedge warbler just there a second ago, yeah.
Yep, robin, chaffinch, tree sparrow, willow warbler, blackbird, and coal tit. Those are the top ones that it identified. So, you know, I think there's definitely pretty good in there, but it missed out on the wood pigeon, which I can hear
quite clearly. I was going to say to you, the wood pigeon is very prominent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To our ears, it is.
Rooks, I think, there are crows in there.
I'm
not
impressed.
You're not impressed by me or the computer, Richard?
With the computer?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
I think there are rooks, wrens, and the wren is very, very prominent.
Very prominent there, yeah.
Robin,
yeah.
Quite prominent. Mm-hmm. Wood pigeon, couldn't miss that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Blackbird, certainly. And the only ones that I'm a bit hairy on is possibly song thrush and possibly mistle thrush, but I hear no tits at all.
No, I agree with you. Absolutely. I think that's a mistake.
Now, are you looking, when your software looks at this, I mean, birdsong consists of pitch, mm-hmm. frequency, or spectrum of frequencies. Now, you will isolate some of the birds straight away on the basis of frequency. The blackbirds are lower pitched, things like long-tailed tits, very high pitch, goldcrests, things like that. Now, the next thing is template. There is a kind of template. There is a standard format for, say, chaffinch song. It has a nice mm-hmm. three-section structure to it. It's like you and I speaking English. You speak English one way, and I speak English slightly differently. I speak a kind of Hiberno version of English. And then each of us yep. individually speaks things differently. And every bird is speaking, every chaffinch dishes up a song which is unique mm-hmm. to them, and their neighbours get to know each other through this. So your machine is looking at a kind of a limited, a kind of a template, a general specification which must be conformed to, and then it has to say, well, it's certainly chaffinch. Then after that, it's got to narrow it down. Does it do that?
Well, this is really the challenge. So, you know, my work is on how can you design a system that can actually sort of make these generalizations, even if it doesn't know about all the possible chaffinches in the world. Can it still recognise the general pattern of chaffinches? So in the past, people would have done it by literally sort of giving it a single recording of a chaffinch and kind of assuming that that's a template that will be matched exactly. And that doesn't work very well. So what the method that we've developed, it takes the kind of frequencies that you mentioned and it kind of breaks them down into sort of jigsaw pieces. And then when you give it a particular recording, it identifies we've got these jigsaw pieces and these jigsaw pieces, not necessarily in the same order, in exactly the same pattern as we had before.
Do you mean that in a blackbird they have maybe 100 different little phrases that it puts together in various orders to form its song? Are you looking at these little phrases and analysing them?
Even smaller than that. So we have with chaffinch, for example, you've got the it sounds sort of like at the start, and each one of those tiny little sounds might be a single fragment, or it might even be two fragments because they're really tiny.
So this is what you're doing then, which is quite different to the apps that we can download, birdsong.ie or some of these from iTunes, which I have on my phone, and you hold it out the window and it says it's a 70% chance that it's a song thrush or a 70% chance that it's a robin. And it probably is, because you can see the thing singing, and lo and behold, it is. And then sometimes, of course, it gets spectacularly wrong if a starling is mimicking something. But what you're saying is that these are done by these apps being programmed with a single template of a generic robin or a generic blackbird, and this is what they're saying is what you're listening to, whereas you're doing something entirely different from first principles.
Well, I can't speak for any particular apps and say exactly what they do, because I haven't spoken to the people who made them, but yeah, in general, you know, there are these apps that are sort of pretty good, but nothing that's really completely nailed it yet. So, you know, we're making progress towards that, and I think we have better results than a lot of the things we've seen before.
So if you took a phrase or a note, say a 7 kilohertz warning note from a particular bird, that's the famous one because it's so alike from bird to bird.
Yes.
Now, if you looked at the frequencies within that and the relative amplitudes of those frequencies, there might be a different footprint or fingerprint, I suppose, in this case, a voice print, for each species. Is that the case? And can your spectrograph do that? Can it take it in, divide it up and look at the various ratios and say, yes, that is a tunnock or that? She's a blackbird or whatever.
Yeah, well, this is the challenge, isn't it? Because if you have a complicated sound, like the sound of the song of a robin or a blackbird, then, you know, it's pretty much distinctive. It has all these features that make it different from every other species. Whereas, as you say, these warning sounds, they are very common among different species. And essentially in the same way that if you hear a person clearing their throat, you can sort of tell if it's a man or a woman, but you don't necessarily recognise if it's your friend or not. Exactly. Or if it's a dog.
Was that me or Aina? Sorry, go on.
So then, so if you have like just a tiny burst of a warning call, then you might not. It might be sort of literally impossible to tell exactly which species it is. And, you know, you're never going to be guaranteed to get a perfect result every time.
Now, can you use what your work is to tell one robin from another so that you know this is the one and now there's a second one in the area and it's a different one? Or is it just a robin and that's it, full stop, or a finch or whatever? Can you say individual ones, like you hear a voice and that's Derek, he's a human, but it actually is Derek's voice as opposed to Richard's voice, even though they're
Derek's voice. Moreover, I'm Derek's voice with a Dublin accent as opposed to a Cork accent and a slightly different dialect.
Yes, you can do. You can do. So the approach that we use. I call it machine learning. Is sort of the name that we call it, and you develop these techniques that can learn to recognise the set of labels that you're interested in, so blackbird, robin, or blackbird A, blackbird B. I haven't focused on that, but yes, you can apply the same techniques to tell the difference between blackbirds. And some people in similar areas of research, they study these things to analyse, did this bird learn to sing from this tutor bird, or did it learn from a different bird nearby? So you can kind of recognise the similarities as well.
But have they noticed any differences between, for example, the counties they may live in? I was actually quite serious about that.
Well, yeah, I don't know about counties in terms of the borders, but there certainly are. I mean, I have a colleague who's studied skylark. And skylark, like a lot of songbirds, because they learn the song from their parents or their neighbours as they grow up, you get this regional dialect, essentially. And so skylarks can recognise the difference between a bird that is their neighbour that's lived there a while and a different bird that might be a skylark that's, say, an intruder coming from further away.
Now, are you saying that all birds learn from a tutor bird?
Not all birds, but
because
all
songbirds.
Because
I'm thinking of the cuckoo. I mean, who's teaching the cuckoo to say cuckoo?
Yeah, that's the thing. So there's a particular subset of birds that are the true songbirds, and they're the ones that learn as they grow up.
Well, now, Dan, I'm going to have to ask you to hold on for a moment. Let's go back to Dan. Dan, are you still there?
Yeah, hello.
So there you are. Great Britain with a good chance today. They're the defending champions. They won the Aga Khan Trophy here last year. Are you into show jumping at all?
No.
Not your thing.
They didn't even show me the trophy.
Oh, dear. Anyway, Richard.
Yes, I was wondering, we got as far as analysing various things with your spectrograph, and we had a printout, say, of this amplitude, the intensity, the various frequencies, harmonics and everything in the sound. Now, somebody has to come along like the radiologist who looks at your X-ray and says, yes, that's right and that isn't right and we must look at that further. Or is the computer capable of scanning it and coming out with printout which says Bluetis or Chaffinch?
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
There's no human intervention.
No, this is the this is partly my aim, really, which is that I'm no bird expert, so I need to design systems that can give me the answer without me having to poke away at the spectrogram. But also, the way these techniques work is we use really large amounts of data, so we use hours and hours and hours of bird song, and so you just can't manually inspect every single one of those, but you put this large amount of spectrograms of bird recordings into the computer and it sort of learns to generalize from those. So that's the idea. The computer's doing all the inspection for us.
In Alexander Solzhenitsyn's The First Circle, there are fellows working away on voice print identification for Stalin. They're listening to voices and trying to analyze and say, oh, that's Derek Mooney. Definitely we'll lock him up in the Lubyanka or something like this.
Yeah, so I can tell you that research is still going on.
You're doing a similar kind of thing. You're looking at a huge spectrum of stuff and be able to pick out some little birdie in there and say, in other words, you eventually would be able to go to a wood, install one of these things, and just wait at home to find out there are wood warblers in such a wood, or there are such and such, or so and so.
Yeah, why are you doing it? Is it really what Richard is asking?
Well, the thing is that, so from my point of view, it's because I think sound is natural sound, and even the human sound is absolutely fascinating. And trying to sort of use these kind of techniques to sort of unpick some of the mysteries of sound, that's my motivation. But in terms of applications, the thing that you just said about sort of sticking a microphone in a forest and then just sort of tracking which birds arrive and which birds don't arrive. That's really valuable. So you were talking earlier in the program about weather and climate change, and we know that migrating birds are affected by climate change because they move to different latitudes as the climate gently warms up, and so we can, if we have these automatic methods, we can track and see sort of as the years pass, we can monitor how the blackbird, for example, the blackbird distribution of the population is changing.
And I suppose it works better if there's just one single bird.
It does work better
something
with
like
just
the Don Chorus. It probably
bird,
gets
yeah.
a tiny bit confused.
Yeah, that's what was going on in that example that we started with, because there were so many birds in there that it's certainly a challenge for me as a listener to identify them all. But yes, it does make it harder for the computer as well.
So, can you do it in real time, or do you have to put in a recording? Can you stick up a mic and just identify something in real time?
It's fast enough to be kind of real time, but it would take, say, just a few seconds to answer.
Oh, I see. I'm just thinking recording. For next year's Dawn Chorus, maybe we should enlist your services have you down there with your equipment, and we can have ask our experts with their ears they think they've heard, and then you can tell us what you think your computer heard.
Yeah, one thing that I definitely want to say is that this kind of approach is not a replacement for expert listeners. Part of the appeal is that you can apply it for 24 hours a day in a forest, but the expert sort of skilled listeners still have the edge in terms of the detail. So if you put the two together for applications, that's great. But I'd like to see what happens if we sort of pit one against the other.
Well, Dan, just following up on that point, I worry about, of course, I'm of an older generation, but I worry about all of this technology. I worry that, say, naturalists and that, they just won't go out into the field anymore.
Ah, Terry.
No, seriously.
Get a grip.
Well, go back to
they're not going to stop going out. Binoculars didn't stop them. Telescopes didn't stop them.
Even go back
National Geographic didn't stop them.
No,
Come on, Terry.
But the likes of Socrates, if you go back thousands of years ago, he had the same idea. He hated the idea of people putting things down on paper because maybe he worried then would will people not be able to tell stories or pass it on from one generation to the next? And I just worry that people want to say, I'd like to hear a robin. So rather than go out along a hedgerow and walk the hedgerow or walk along a canal to see a robin or see a dragonfly, you're just going to download one of these apps and you're just going to look at it on the app. I actually worry about it because, if I look at my own kids...
That's not what he's doing.
No, I know that, but I'm just following on from the idea what Aina said.
That's not even what Aina was doing.
But I do, understand,
app. She sticks her telephone out the window and she just wants to identify the bird if she can't identify it herself.
Mm-hmm. I was just checking to see if the app works, actually.
But the point I'm saying is that I just worry about all of this technology. I just don't... I don't know what your feelings are on that.
It's definitely something that you got to think about because, you know, if people are going to be walking around, you know, walking through the forest and they're just sort of staring at a phone as they walk through the forest, that's, you know, that's definitely an issue. And some people kind of get lulled into that. But on the other hand, this technology can help people to engage with nature. So people who don't care about walking through the forest, you know, they can download an app and sort of find out about sound and find out about birds, and they'll be drawn into the wonders of walking through a forest.
You have a very good bedside manner. You've reassured Terry now. See, he doesn't look as worried as anybody.
I'm calmed. I'll download one.
Are you really worried about it, Terry? Was that just a question you were asking?
No, I am.
How could you be really worried about
because
something?
Because
in that case, we wouldn't be doing a dawn chorus in the first place and stop people from going out into the woods.
The point I'm saying is I just see that there are so few young people being involved in going out in nature, going out and walking along a hedge to see if they can see. I'm like my own kids. They're in college. They're doing science. They're doing PhDs. They couldn't tell a blackbird from a crow.
Shame on you.
Well, shame on me, maybe so.
Am I right, Richard?
Indeed, you are.
I wanted to go back to the cuckoo that you were mentioning there, Derek.
I'm sorry, I'm only joking.
I know you're only joking. Wait till I get to you afterwards.
He's crying, he's running out of the studio.
You were saying about the cuckoo and the cuckoo doesn't hear his father singing, so how can the cuckoo sing? The cuckoo, in fact, hears the meadow pipit singing. So actually, if birds learn off other birds, why don't cuckoos sing like meadow pipits if they're reared by a meadow pipit?
Yeah, that's a good question. But it's songbirds specifically that learn by listening. So not every bird does that. But
and of course,
But they're actually when they're very young, that's the sensitive period when they learn and they're in the nest, and they're also kind of genetically predisposed to be more interested in some sounds than others. So you can in laboratories, people do sometimes sort of like force a bird to listen to different species and it develops a weird sort of hybrid song, but they're sort of naturally more interested in the sound of their own species in a lot of cases.
Dan, we'll be in touch with you if it's okay, and I think we will get you on board for next year's Dawn Chorus if we're
I'd love to do it, yeah.
6 feet above ground. But thank you very much in the meantime for being so patient today and hanging around and then answering all the questions. We really do appreciate it, Dan. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you.